Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing. Always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true transparency pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear. Like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing. Always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true transparency pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
...615-737-1045, our number. Midday 180, served up by Wendy's. Vrabel, the brand new head coach. How about patience? We need to discuss patience from different levels for this topic, Paul.
Look, most new coaches coming in get some level of benefit of the doubt, right? In terms of some patience. I think this is a very unique circumstance where a guy's taken over a playoff team where the GM said the talent was not maximized, and he used that expression over and over and over, not maximized, not maximized, not maximized, and that he's expected to maximize these guys. And the division's gotten better, but Robinson indicated with the draft, and we talked thoroughly about this, four-person draft, two trades up with your first two picks, this roster doesn't need a lot, John Robinson saying. The problem here was the coaching, John Robinson saying. I've addressed the two biggest concerns at inside and outside linebacker, and I hired a linebacker coach. We're good to go, he's saying. He's saying it, not just us, yeah. Not just me.
I don't know how you
just,
can read into that any fans. Differently.
We're good to go, he's saying. And I think that hurts them from a perspective that the pressure's going to be tough from the beginning. I don't have any doubt that Mike Vrabel could handle the pressure, but I think it's a different kind of pressure than Mike Mularkey had when he was taking over. It's a different kind of pressure than any coach has when they're taking over the traditional circumstances of having a bad team.
There was different patience levels, even with the last couple of hires, despite both coaches being gone within 2 years. With Wisenhunt, when he was initially hired, the patient levels were very high. Right.
He inherited Jake Locker. He said this year could be like almost a bye for him, a free pass year, red shirt year,
yep.
Because he doesn't have his quarterback yet. So maybe Locker pans out, but if Locker doesn't, and they want him to try Locker, but then if it doesn't pan out, you say, well, now he gets his quarterback in year two. You know, there's none of that.
There's a reset button there for him that we were discussing at the time.
Yeah, and we were willing to give him it before he turned out to be such an unlikable guy.
Right. And then couple that with the controlling ownership change and the fans being up in arms on losing. The patience was thin very quickly on Ken Wisenhunt.
And but then he withered it away. He let it wither away. Yes. He had it, yeah, and he blew it.
He didn't grab.
Vrabel doesn't have it.
Well,
and I don't know that he should have it.
But the coach in the middle of Wisenhunt and Vrabel, Mike Mularkey, fans gave him no patience from the get-go.
Well, because they didn't like the
hire. They were upset with the hire at the time because they felt like the hire wasn't thorough enough. And we heard we had loaded lines. We talked about that from a couple of months after the hire.
And people didn't like that last year's team, despite the fact it was 8-4, largely because of how Mike Mularkey coached it. And we talked about that.
You and I sat at Nissan Stadium. Was it prior to the game against the Rams? It was Jacksonville or the Rams. One of those games where we were discussing there was a disconnect between the coaching staff and the fan base.
Absolutely.
And they just did not see eye to eye on the future of the organization from the perspective of the fans and the perspective of, here's the offensive system. This is what's best for the quarterback, and this is going to win football games. Well, fast forward now just a few months, what, 7-8 months from then, we're sitting here thinking, where is the patience level for Mike Vrabel now?
I think there's a reconnect, and I think there's a benefit of the doubt for Vrabel on a lot of levels. But I think if this team starts badly or doesn't have a good season, people are all of a sudden, going to be looking at that 9-7 malarkey season that they hated. And that's going to be the standard by which they compare this team, which is not unfair. He's brought in to grow that team. Now, there are a lot of things that could go differently. Here, to me, is the one big hurdle. And we want to know. Get on the phone. Get on the tweeter.
Yeah, at Midday When Any on Twitter. On the phones, 737-1045. We've just opened up the line.
How patient will you be? How patient should people be? I'll say this. This is the one thing for which they need patience, which I think they're not going to get patience, which I think could be the initial tension, if you will, the initial tug of war. And it goes back to what Dan Orlovsky, who's going to join us later this week, said, and what I saw out of the offense at OTAs and minicamp. This offense is complicated and takes a while. John Middlecoff, the former scout who writes for The Athletic San Francisco, he was in and saw practice and wrote about it. You know, they were stopping a lot. The verbiage is really long. The play calls are like 12 words. I was listening to LaFleur call some of it. It's complicated. It's complicated, and it's based on rhythm a lot, and it takes a lot of work to get to a point where you reach that rhythm. Orlovsky said for Mariota, it'll be kind of a breaking him down, then building him back up in the offense, and there will be a time where it clicks. Where's that click? I think all of us are hopeful that click is in the preseason.
Well,
what if that click
normally doesn't happen in just a preseason?
What if that click is week 4 and there's a panic here? What if that click is week 6? What if it's week 8?
Well,
people are going to be pissed.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can see it coming. I mean, I'm just looking at the first month of the season with two division games. You open up
run through the schedule.
You open up on the road at Miami, which is not going to be an easy game to open up with, despite the fact that many people feel like Miami is kind of stuck in quicksand. I'm not one of them. I think they've improved. Then you follow that up with a home game against Houston. Then you travel to Jacksonville and back-to-back AFC South matchups. And then week 4, return home against the defending Super Bowl champion, Philadelphia Eagles. That's September.
That's hard. That is hard. And if that offense isn't clicking, here's the thing you would hope. If the offense hasn't got to its moment, hoping the defense can carry this team a little bit, that secondary is going to intercept some passes and give you some good field position, that Adoree Jackson is going to get his hand on a couple punts and maybe take one back and give you red zone possession on another one, things like that. But I think this is my concern going in, right? When is the offense ready? When is the offense going to be what it's going to be? And I can totally picture us being 2 weeks into the season and them saying, offense still got a ways to go. It's going to take a little bit of time. I don't know. Does Vrabel ask for patience then? Not so much saying, hey, we ask the fans for patience, but saying, hey, we knew this was going to take a while and we're not panicking. And I could totally see things playing out in that fashion. And I wonder very much how I don't wonder. I expect this market will not take it well.
Well, let's just take a look at the first year head coaches last year and how they fared. And then the expectations going into year 2 with what they've set up. Start with Kyle Shanahan. His team started 0-9. In San Francisco, they finished 6-10.
And he inherited a bad team without a quarterback. And
they trade for Garoppolo. They trade for Garoppolo. They don't start him immediately. In fact, he made his first home start against the Titans late in the season.
And he looked awfully smart for being that patient with the guy who was learning an offense, by the way, a lot like this offense.
Vance Joseph with Denver, 5-11 in his first season last year.
And very nearly fired.
That's their worst season since 2010.
Took really a late change of heart by John Elway and some major changes to the staff.
Sean McVay, 11-5, home run.
The standard for turning a thing around.
Anthony Lynn out in L.A., 9-7.
And it took them a while, if I'm not mistaken. They started sluggish. That's the kind of, I think what the Chargers did last year is maybe what you would think the Titans, it could possibly happen to the Titans this year.
And L.A., I'll say San Diego. San Diego started 0-4 last year. They finished 9-7. So that is a team that was still trying to figure things out right out of the gate, but were able to claw their way back in playoff contention late in the year.
I mean, know how hard that is to dig out. Digging out is hard. What about McDermott?
McDermott, 9-7 in Buffalo. And they went to the playoffs for the first time since 99.
Despite one very big, very bad decision by a first-year coach. That's the other thing here.
And they started Peterman out on the West Coast.
Yeah. I think Vrabel's a really smart guy, and he's got a lot of the intangible stuff you look for in a coach. But is there going to be a mistake? I mean, I don't think there's going to be I'm going to start Nathan Peterman-sized mistake, because he's got a better roster than that. But does he have a moment somewhere that's akin to McDermott's Peterson moment? I think you don't want to expect it, but you kind of have to allow for it. To a degree, he's going to be learning on the fly.
615-737-1045, our number. In some cases, you can make the argument that a step back in year one can propel you into your systems moving forward. You take a step back for two steps forward, so to speak. I'm not so sure that's the case with this coaching change this offseason with Vrabel and the expectations Titans fans have after what we saw last year in the playoffs.
And nobody wants to hear it.
No. And Vrabel's not using the word patience either.
Not at all.
And I do think we need to compare it to the last couple of coaches. Now, there has also been impatience with ownership and coaching. I mean, it goes beyond just the fans' perception of this. Amy Adams Drunk has showed us that she's ready to win and win at a high level. It's not about waiting around to see how much better a coach can be. She's willing to pay three coaches this year, two of them to not coach.
And she'll be off the hook for both of them after this year. But yeah, and look, she loves John Robinson. Now, history has kind of shown, and it's a brief history with her, but she's had more of an affinity for one guy than the other in these jobs, right? Rustin Webster versus Mike Mularkey as a candidate. She was a Mularkey person, right? Mularkey versus Robinson, so to speak. She is a Robinson person. Now, putting them both on the same schedule, hopefully there's not a scenario where she is with one or the other. But the division of power became clear, and this is a more traditional GM coach thing. Robinson certainly is going to let Vrabel do the coaching. He let him hire his staff and all of that stuff, but Robinson's in control of the roster, and Robinson hired the coach. That's a different dynamic than ownership hiring the two. She obviously, was guided through the process, I think, by Robinson. I mean, Robinson soured on Mularkey, undoubtedly. Robinson came in and he was, whether it's a fair term or not, handcuffed by Mularkey to Mularkey, right? And I think he did a pretty good job making the most of it. I think they forged a pretty good relationship. It went south in the last third of last season. You and I have discussed a lot where that was. We're probably never going to know. It could have been tied to the Arizona trip, which was a disaster. Could have started, if it wasn't, it was already going. I think it was accelerated in Arizona with a terrible team that wasn't ready to play and didn't play well enough against the team it needed to beat. And then for it not to beat Arizona or San Francisco cost itself a division crown, home field in the playoffs and all of that stuff. I don't think he's going to come to similar crossroads with Mike Vrabel anytime soon, right? This is not a 2-year marriage. This is a 5-year marriage and hopefully a longer term marriage. But and she now has to be patient in a way that she hasn't been able to be patient before, which was the right thing. She's done the right thing, I think. Now the right thing is to sit back and let it play.
See, I do point to the Arizona trip because they entered that West Coast swing at 8-4 on the season.
Very good shape.
And they returned to Nashville at 8-6. That was a long trip. And long
it
trip.
It was a bad decision in hindsight. It's easier to say in hindsight to stay out there. We were out there with them. They stewed in that loss in a way that both Mularkey and Robinson, and it's Mularkey's in control of these things. He could not extract them from standing waist deep in the pool of that loss, kind of boiling in it like a soup, right? No matter if he put them on buses and took them to, you know, the Suns game or whatever, there was no getting out of it. Those guys needed to go home to get away from it. And they were prisoners, kind of.
You know, and just thinking back on that month, and then, Dwayne, your phone call straight ahead here. Starting in December, it was December 3rd, when they won against Houston. Then, you know, the offense, not great throughout all of this stretch, but then really sputtered against Arizona. They have a final play where they're trying to fit the ball to Adoree Jackson on a play that he says, didn't he say he hadn't practiced it in a while or something?
Yeah.
And then you go to San Francisco and lose that game the way they did, with Garoppolo chewing up the defense in the final part of that game. But again, the offense not doing all that much. And you return back home where... Did we even hear from Robinson over the final month of the season publicly?
No, I think very dark. You turn back home, you lost to the Rams, which, you know, that was a game people presumed at that point you were going to lose based on how good the Rams had gotten. Then you had to beat the Jags, and the Jags, to your good fortune, didn't have much to play for, even though they did play.
They played to win that game, for sure. And then you have the game at Kansas City, where after the game at Kansas City, Mularkey says publicly he doesn't feel...
Support.
He doesn't feel the support and went into that game thinking he had to win to keep his job. And he was, in fact, correct.
But again, a guy who says, I don't talk about my contract, in post-game of a playoff win, talking about his contract.
Right, right. But we say all that and recap that to point to patience. There was no patience there with letting this offense come along. It had reached its peak, according to management. So now where's the patience level moving into the new regime? 615-737-1045, our number. Dwayne is up on line one. Hey, Dwayne.
Hey, guys. I have just two comments, one on my patience level and one on the play calling, something you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
But, about my patience level, I may be different than most fans.
Talk better into your phone. Talk better into your phone.
I will have a little more patience with this coaching staff for several reasons, one of which just the way they ended the season last year and the way they sort of backed into that playoff spot, it was just left a bad taste in my mouth. So it's hard to consider this team coming back a playoff team, even though they made it. But also, just because I am so glad that they made a change, the coaching, it was just everything was stale. And just with this new group, you know, he's got some young guys in there, it's sort of re-energize me as a fan. We sit in the stands every week and complain about the play calling, and I'm just excited that this is a total new group and we're able to see something completely different. So that gives me a little bit more patience as well.
If what you see that's completely different, though, is not quickly satisfying,
if it's not hitting on all cylinders,
what will you think
then? What's your patience level?
What do you envision?
It'll be, I agree. It'll be probably really quick back to where it was with the not much patience level and getting tired of it real quick, because those young guys can go one of either way. You know, they can be fresh and exciting, or they can be new and stand there like a, you know, deer in headlights.
Yep.
So, hoping for the re-energizing of the whole franchise with those younger guys in there. But as far, and on the, I guess moving on to the play calling, you mentioned, the play calling of the plays are difficult with the, you know, 12 words in the plays. And that's something, it's probably been brought up on here before, but I just do not understand that. I'm by far no X's and O's guy for football. I like watching it, but some of the intricacies of it are, you know, past me a little bit. I don't take the time to learn it, but I just don't understand why it takes those long play calls to get in a play on the football field at the NFL level. I know it's a big jump up from college, but why why it takes it to be like, you know, it's not brain surgery out there. Why do some of the coaches try to make it that way?
Yeah, I think it's a really good question. I asked some questions about it, and I should write off of what I have. I was listening to LaFleur at the last practice. And to be honest with you, I mean, and he's working off a sheet. You know, he's got a folded half sheet of paper in his hand or a laminated sheet or whatever it is. And he would say, okay, let's have Jackrabbit 86, blah, blah, blah. And then he would kind of stop, you know, to find the rest of the play. So I think part of the disjointed thing is that it's long. Mariota said it's not, you know, ridiculously long. I do think, you know, you've got a guy at the head who's a couple years removed from looking at pictures on the sideline for play calls. And to take that and to go to 12-word play calls seems to me extreme. I'm sure there's a good rationale for it, but it seems like, here's another thing, you get stuff lost in the translation. That's coming down from the booth through somebody. I think LaFleur's probably in the booth. We don't know for sure. But it gets translated, and there are a lot of words there for things to get translated in. Now, again, for some guys, only three words of that play call are relevant to them. One of them setting the protection, right? One of them's telling you left or right.
I need LaFleur talking straight to Marcus Mariota in this offense, because we saw how that worked with McVay and Goff. McVay was known for talking as long as possible to help set up the defense and do different things within that offense. I need LaFleur doing some of the same things. I'm not saying that's every play, but I need LaFleur to be able to speak directly to Marcus Mariota and no in-between.
I don't know if we've discussed the plan for where LaFleur will be, but it's hard for an offensive offensive coordinator not to be upstairs in terms of seeing things. McVay, I think, more the exception than the rule. About these 12-word play calls, I mean, I think one of the big things is, do you have guys smart enough, equipped enough to handle them? Now, I'm optimistic that Rishard Matthews and Corey Davis can and will. You know, if you're talking about Justin Hunter and Dorial Green-Beckham, guys that John Robinson moved very aggressively away from, are they making it through a 12-word play call? Let's be honest.
No.
I think you're losing their attention halfway through that play call.
I think the key here is, you know, that for every player, you're listening for certain words within that play call.
Right.
Right.
But you have to be awake and say, all right, my three words are 9, 10, and 11 in this play call, and I got to be patient and be paying attention to hear my three words. It's an interesting question. I always remember this. I don't remember which Hard Knocks it was. I don't remember where Jay Gruden was at the time. He might have been an assistant at Cincinnati. He might have already.
That's where it was.
Might have already been in Washington. Mike Smith was still head coach in Atlanta. And so maybe it was a Cincinnati Hard Knocks, but they were together for a joint practice and they were talking before the practice. Or no, it might not have been. It might have been Marvin Lewis talking to Mike Smith. Gruden wasn't involved, but Gruden was the guy's thinking. And I'm pretty sure it was. And Marvin Lewis and Mike Smith were joking about it. It's just a simple game, man. We just got to, you know, simple game. Can't overcomplicate things. And I'm thinking, your offensive coordinator has play calls that take a half an hour, Jay Gruden. And you're talking about just a simple game. I mean, it's hypocritical, this lighthearted talk that you're having with Mike Smith. When you're talking about a simple game, but your offensive coordinator is the most complex guy in the league. So I'm anxious to see. And I think maybe it's not. We'll ask Orlovsky about this when we have him later in the week. Just how complicated it is to sort through that play call to get it down, all of that.
Dan Orlovsky will join us on Friday. He has a big piece coming on Thursday morning on Good Morning Football. He was texting me this morning about how he's doing a breakdown of Marcus Mariota for Good Morning Football on NFL Network. So we'll certainly discuss that with him on Friday and dive into this play calling situation versus language of the play call. But I think that also goes to the, you know, trying to get the offense on in stride, right? There will be growing pains with everything involved. And is this defense good enough to carry the load early on? Because I think that's the whole key in how fast they can start here. Because I don't think it's not a question of, is this offense clicking on all cylinders by week two? You know, I think it's a season process of getting this offense established. It's no easy task to just snap your fingers and think, okay, everything's going to be fine now because LaFleur's calling plays. Everybody has to buy in. It's not just the quarterback.
Though McVay just did it pretty quickly. And so it's not unreasonable for people to look at that and want something like that. And it didn't take the Rams long to catch on and pick it up. And it was vastly different than what Jeff Fisher and bad coordinators but that he had
were McVay doing. Did that without and Jared Goff turned things around tremendously. But McVay did that with a potential MVP candidate in the backfield with Todd Gurley, who could do everything.
Yes.
It's more than just the quarterback.
I was going to say that here, you know, if it takes Mariota and the passing offense some time, you know, we're talking about the defense maybe leading the charge early. Run game, too, will be less complicated. It is generally easier than an intricate passing offense. I should say as well, like, we don't know how long the play calls were from Larkey and Rubisky, you know, and what that was like to digest. So, could be making too much of it. I think, though, to me, it was part of the sputteriness of what I watched in the two practices.
And you certainly wrote about that at PaulKuharsky.com about the offense not looking great and the defense having a nice offseason. You know, but that's part of the things we're reading into now with the coaching change and with the franchise QB going into year four. You're thinking, okay, how are things going to transition now? How are things going to sync up? So I think it's perfectly fine for you to listen in to how many words a play call is and decide for yourself whether or not it's complicated or not based on results.
Yeah. Also, think of it this way. Thematically, this is different, right? Thematically, this is different. So you're changing guys' thinking, right? There are some new techniques. There are, Vrabel went hard in that last press conference about, you know, you see people running around this league on screens, and we need to work hard to be able to do that. Well, this, you know, the reason this hasn't been a screen team, we've been told time and time again, starting with Jeff Fisher, but I think by virtually every coach following that, is that it's really hard to time up the screen stuff, and you have to spend a great deal of time on it and weighing the time versus reward stuff and the personnel that they had, they judged it not to be a way to go. Well, I think that's a deficiency in the modern NFL if you can't get the ball out to running backs and take advantage of some of the space that's made available. And Mike Vrabel sounded like a guy that's not willing to concede that.
Also, when it comes to the play call and getting everything aligned, I think an undervalued part of the conversation is Ben Jones. You know, last 2 years, he was given a ton of credit for getting the offensive line set, aligned properly, the run game, different things pointing out and blocking assignments. You know, he's the other part of the new offense that needs to click early on.
And we didn't mention, we're talking about potential for the offense to start slowly. Potential.
Yeah.
Missing starting right tackle, probably first month. Key guy, the building block guy in Jack Conklin. We don't know when he's going to be back, but I think most of us are not expecting him to be on the field in Miami in early September. And, you know, that's a hole as well. Dennis Kelly, a good third tackle, but not nearly as good as Jack Conklin. You're missing a guy there who's a part of a group that you want to be tone setters.